I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we're recording on today, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. I extend my respect to their elders past, present and emerging, and any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander listeners that we have joining us. Sovereignty has never been ceded. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Mark James is a creative and ex-corporate fashion designer living in New York City with his dog, Nietzsche. Mark grew up in small town Buffalo and has experienced his fair share of challenges in life. Today we chat about family trauma, relationships, sex and love. We also chat about breaking free of your past, going to therapy and processing the grief of losing a child. Thank you so much for sharing your story, Mark. I'm so grateful that we got to connect. Let's get into the chat. This is Life Chats, deep and meaningful conversations with friends and strangers. Thanks for being here, Mark James.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming to Life Chats. So it's interesting because I've known you for a little while, not in person. We've kind of like been watching each other's lives for a while. And I think this is the perfect opportunity to actually talk about all the things that like inspire us, the experiences that have shaped us, kind of anything that we've had to work through. This is the perfect format to do it in a way that's like, there's no boundaries. And there's also no judgment because the audience of this show are so supportive and interested in people's life journeys. So I'm very interested in yours.
Okay.
I kind of start all the podcasts in the same way because I love to understand a person's early life. I think it's so formative, our relationships, our experiences, just our belief systems as children, I think really shape our lives. So I would love to know, when you think about your childhood, what is the predominant emotion that you feel?
I think of perseverance when I think of my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I think of, I don't know if that's necessarily the emotion, but where I come from, there wasn't statistically, I guess, based off of friends and family and what people ended up doing with their lives, which is probably a pretty common answer in middle America. Statistically, I don't think there's not very many people where I'm from that have made this much of their life.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, I don't mean it in a financial way. It doesn't have anything to do with money or success.
Mm-hmm.
It just has to do with overcoming probably a little bit of luck and life experiences that have happened since my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I was very adamant about getting out of the town that I grew up in right away.
Why?
Because there wasn't anything there.
Yeah.
There wasn't anything there for me. There wasn't anything there for a future.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think that also coming from having like a more creative outlook on life or mindset, there definitely wasn't going to be any kind of work there for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the shit that I got into was probably going to make me either dead or in jail.
I'm keen to get into that.
Okay.
As a younger Mark though, like I'm thinking 5, 6, 7, what did you enjoy doing? Like what was family life like? Did you enjoy school? Did you hate school? Like paint a picture for the listeners and for me as to what those first kind of years as a really young child were like.
Family life was turbulent. My mom and dad split up early. That's also, you know, something that is common, especially with our generation. But
why was it turbulent?
It was just turbulent in the sense of, you know, my father, who I have a good relationship with now, him and I were, we had a rocky relationship growing up. You know, he wasn't... you don't really understand it until you're older, I think. When you're an adult and you've made some mistakes in life, then you look back and be like, oh, maybe my dad's or mom or whomever isn't such a scumbag that I thought they were. Mm-hmm. They're just human. And it's harder than you think. So with that being said, my father was there for a little bit, but then seemed to grow bored of the family life and didn't end up staying with my mom. Didn't really have much presence in my life until I was about 16. Mm-hmm. So from 5 to 15-ish, that 10 years was a lot of moving around. My mom was a single mom with epilepsy, so she couldn't work. She couldn't drive. And she had a pain in the ass son that was getting in trouble a lot.
You so. Or someone else?
So, you know, I think that also shaped mine and hers relationship, which we can get to when we get to that time. But, you know, in the beginning, it was very hard, right up through being a teenager. Being a young kid, I mean, it was tough. It was crazy. I don't know why or how some things happened. I remember just having a very dark side.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's something that I don't remember, but was in my subconscious that happened. But I tried to hang myself from a fence when I was like 5 or 6 at a birthday party.
Oh my
and
God.
And maybe I was looking for attention.
Do you remember the experience, or has this been like told to you?
No, I remember it. I was in a backyard. There was a bunch of kids there. Mm-hmm. And like, I just remember tying like a barbed wire, not barbed wire with like the spikes, but like, it was like a wire that was hanging from a fence. Mm. And I remember tying it around my neck and like falling like forward from the fence in the tree and just kind of like strangling myself a little bit.
Because you wanted to see how it felt, or you had seen it somewhere else, or?
I think it's just become something, and you know, I'm not sure, you know, I'm not a psychologist, but I think that when you're used to, as a child, when, if negativity is what gets you attention, like, you cry, so somebody runs to you and wants to help, or you fall down and scrape yourself, so you get the lollipop type thing. Mm-hmm. You know, that's an easy generic example, maybe. But I think that from seeing dark shit growing up, you think that that's the way to get people's attention and get a reaction out of people. So after that happened, I remember going to school the next week and. The principal took me out of the school. They didn't call my mom because they probably thought that there was some abuse at home, possibly, which there definitely wasn't. I mean, my mom beat my ass, but we have to remember it was the late 80s. So your mom beat your ass.
It was
you got
more
in trouble.
Normal. Yeah, yes. Normalized.
So they took me out of school. They took me to the guy, like a guidance counselor person. I was in there and I was freaking out, and they had me in this waiting room. And I remember running out.
What did you think was going to happen to you?
I don't know. It was scary. I don't remember. I don't remember if I felt like I was in trouble or if I was just really uncomfortable, but I was just with a bunch of strangers. Mm-hmm. I had no idea what was going on. So I ran home. My mom was pissed. I remember that. And then that kind of set me up, as far as school goes, leading into that, kind of set me up to just not really trust people at school. So school was tough from there. And yeah.
Do you describe yourself as someone who has had a hard life?
Not any harder than anybody else. I think that the way I say it and the way I look at it is I've had as hard of a life as most people or many people, especially in this country. But I would never say that I've had it harder than anybody. Mm-hmm. I don't self-pity. I don't try to one-up people on hardship. You know, there's people that have had it harder. There's people who haven't had it as hard. So I think that, yeah, like I said, I think that I've definitely had some challenges, but that's where I leave it.
So tell me about your teenage years. Is this a point where anything specific starts to happen for you? I'm also interested to hear, like, were there any discussions around like what you might want to do when you leave school, or, you know, like, did you have any visions of, oh yeah, I want to go and work here or travel there or move to this place or get out of here? Like, did you have any idea?
I wanted to get out of school as soon as possible. I started hanging out so in my early teenage years, like 14, 15, I was a freshman in high school. I started making friends that were like, it was like a brotherhood. And we were not the
what
best.
Do you mean by that?
It felt like family for the first time. Yeah, it felt like I didn't have any brothers and sisters growing up. I have 2 brothers now, but they're much younger than me.
Are they from your dad or your mom?
My dad's second marriage, yeah. Mm. So yeah, you know, I got to that point in your early adolescence when you're meeting people that are like-minded, have been through things in their lives. So you form that bond with them. And it was a great group of friends. But yeah, we weren't the best kids. We fought a lot.
With each other?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah. With each other, with other groups of guys in the area. We were roughneck kids.
Did you enjoy it?
At the time, yeah. Stimulating. Yeah, yeah. I was bored in school. I think that that's another thing. There's not a whole lot of creative outlet to keep you busy as a kid. I had a lot of friends in New York City that they could go to school for like a trade starting at very young, fashion or some kind of art, music, whatever it may be. We didn't really have that. So I think if you are somebody who can't reform to the old way, the old school system, it makes it very tough.
We'll get into your journey like chronologically, of course, but how do you feel when you go back to Buffalo now? Do you go back?
I go back. I lay low. I enjoy the outdoors. I enjoy family. And I get the fuck out. I go for a few days. And everybody that I'm still friends with, which is less than five people, that don't live there anymore, they are the same.
Yeah.
We all share that. Like, we go home. Like I said, I love going hiking. It's a beautiful outdoor space. I grew up near an Indian reservation. That's where I camped on the water. So, yeah. Go home, see family, enjoy the outdoors, and then get out. No bars, nothing like that, because it's nothing but trouble there.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of, you said you thought you were going to wind up in jail or dead. At what point did you start to think that, and why? What was happening?
When I was a teenager, I was sent away as a kid.
What age?
I want to say 17.
Because the behavior was getting out of hand, or did something happen?
I got in a fight on a college campus in the area. And I tried to use a fake ID to get out of it because they were letting anybody over 18 go. So I used my buddy's ID who I had in my pocket. And I got put on probation, but I couldn't behave, couldn't get my shit together. So I got sent away to a boys' school near Philadelphia, which made me had to delay my graduation a year. So the funny thing is, even though I was such a prick as a teenager in school, the teachers liked me because I think I had, you know, me and my friends and I had... We were like young adults already.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't corny as teenagers as much. I mean, I'm sure we were.
Because of what you'd been through? You feel like you had to grow up fast?
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Yeah. You know, it's funny because they say that like when somebody is a drug addict or an alcoholic or something and they get clean, they start from wherever they... You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. I actually had a guest on the podcast who said... He started drinking really heavily at like 14. And by the time he got clean, he was 32, but he felt like he had a 14-year-old's social skills because he had like completely immersed himself in just addiction for so many years that he hadn't really learned how to have real relationships and whatnot until he was clean. Is that kind of what you're saying?
I think that there's something to that, but I'm actually going the opposite way with it.
Oh,
I think that you become, I guess it depends. It depends on what it is. I think for us, it wasn't... Because in the beginning, anyways, it wasn't about addiction. It was just about partying and having fun and being little troublemakers. So I think we, you know, like we would be out at the bars when we were 17 and we'd see our math teacher there and like have a shot with him.
Yeah, you know?
So then we'd see him in school on Monday and like have that little like eye contact, like, ah, motherfucker, I saw you. But, you know, so the point I was getting at with that though is I had to go back. I was sent away for a bit and then I had to go back and redo my senior year in high school. And when I did that, the staff, for the most part, was very helpful. And they wanted to see me do something other than stay there and become a, I don't want to say loser, but stay there not doing anything productive with my life. So they helped me find a school in Pittsburgh. I went to culinary school for a little bit.
Interesting.
When I graduated high school.
Didn't know that.
Yeah.
You enjoyed cooking still?
I was actually going for hotel and restaurant management. So I tried that for a bit, but I just, again... Sitting in a classroom is very hard for me. So especially when you get to those trade schools, because those classes go from like 45 minutes to like 2 to 4 hour classes.
Yeah.
So my mind would just not be able to retain any kind of information. So I did that for a few months and then I went home to my family again, but I was like bound and determined to get out. I just had to figure out what it was that was going to keep me out. So eventually I found fashion. I studied space planning and interior design and architecture. And then I ultimately ended up in fashion. So that kept me on some kind of trajectory for a a career.
At what age was that?
It was later. I did a lot of soul searching and just growing up in that time. I did not hold a job very well. Mm. I would quit. I'd have any excuse to quit. And same with school. And same with relationships. And
okay.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, did you have
relationships? Sit here for hours.
About to do an episode number two. No, I was going to ask, did you have relationships throughout this period of your life, like teenagehood and early adulthood?
Like love relationships or just
relationships? Like, was it just you and this brotherhood that you talk about, or were you also like experiencing love and joy, or was it quite a hard time for you?
It was a hard time. It was a hard time connecting with people. I think that, you know, it's funny. Some people, if they grow up in an environment where they've seen abuse or they've seen like their mother get abused, they become better people from it. Mm-hmm. They become better husbands or boyfriends or whatever, partners. I had quite the opposite experience. I, even though like I resented the people that I had seen abuse my mother, I acted a lot like them. I took in a lot of that trait, and it was hard. You know, I wasn't a good guy to women, and I didn't really figure that out until I got a little older and was like, oh, like you're not, I don't know if it was something that was like, if it was just something that was deep inside my soul that I just wasn't letting surface so I could address it. Mm-hmm. But I think that that's what it was.
You seem like a little emotional thinking about it now.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, yeah. I'm not ready to tear up yet. There's even harder stories, but yeah, like I've seen my mom get beat and it was a pretty fucking crazy thing. And that's actually the last time I saw my mom get beat by her boyfriend is one of the reasons that got me into the tattoo industry. It's such a crazy, like full circle story. So my mom was dating this alcoholic, and I'll give you the kind of quick version, but they were up, they were awake in our apartment. I was asleep.
How old were you? Sorry to interrupt.
I'm trying to even remember. I think about 12.
Yeah, wow.
And I started hearing commotion, and I went out into the living room, and this guy, he started like coming after me. I don't even know what the issue was. He was drunk, you know, he was an asshole. And my mom tried to get in the way. He started beating her up. I didn't know what to do. I was so little, and he was a big guy. So I ran down the hall to this guy who lived, there was a family that lived in the apartment in the front of the building. And this dude named Scott, he is a tattoo artist, I believe still, but he was a tattoo artist then. And he tattooed out of his home because in this time, I mean, what's that, like 92-ish? Tattooing wasn't even acceptable in like everyday life. There were no tattoo shops. People tattooed out of their homes. Mm-hmm. So I used to go and sit and watch this dude tattoo with his kids running around and shit. It was totally unsanitary. but it was, you know, it was different. And anyway, I went and knocked on his door because I was kind of helpless and didn't really know what to do at that point. And Scott is not only a tattoo artist, but he happened to be some kind of black belt in something. So he runs down the hall, grabs this dude and chokes him out quick. The cops come. Thankfully, the guy had left at that point. And after that, I formed kind of a bond and an acceptance of somebody who is looked at. And again, this kind of ties into my friends and I think misunderstood is a perfect word for it. People that are not necessarily bad people, but for whatever reason, they're looked at as, you know, outcasts of society. Mm-hmm. And back in 92-ish and before that, you know, the tattoo artists were looked at as like, it was always biker gangs. It was always something bad. It was never just, oh, this guy raises his family really well and he just happens to tattoo for a living. You know, so I think that shed a lot of light on my future before I even understood what it would be. So anyway, this guy saved my mom's life probably. And after that, I just kept in touch with him and I'd go down and watch him tattoo all the time. I don't understand why I didn't ever try to tattoo, but I think I was just scared to lay a needle on somebody's skin. And even though I could sketch a little bit, shading was like not my strong point. So that wasn't my calling. But yeah, that was one of the scary moments in my life and also pivotal moments and going back to where we were. Sorry, the way I talk is...
No, I love it. Place. It's there doesn't have to be any structure to this.
But the guy... We were discussing...
Scott,
but before that we were discussing...
I wanted to ask, have you ever told Scott that he impacted your life in that way?
No, you know, I've tried to find him. I can't find him on Instagram.
We've got to find Scott.
I have a girl from back home that wrote something on one of my Instagram posts and she said something about Scott. So I'm going to reach out to her and see if she can find him. I think he's in Florida somewhere. But anyway, yeah, hopefully I'll run into Scott one day. But we were talking about how shitty I was towards women. You know, I could go in a lot of different directions with this. I think before I go into any of my stories, I would say that I think what's unfortunate right now, this is a platform to say this finally, is, you know, I'm from Gen X. I'm on the border of millennial, but I like to stay on the Gen X side of that.
Sure you do.
So I think it's unfortunate that there are so many men that I think were raised in a certain era where women were looked at more like objects with like the MTV generation, the way that things were portrayed on television, what Playboy used to be, what porn was, and maybe still is actually, and the things that we had seen as young men growing up. It's unfortunate that men feel safe. Men around my age feel safe coming out and saying, hey, I fucked up and I'd like to share it. So that way men coming after me, young men that are, you know, maybe in their 20s and not very respectful towards women or whatever, you know, I feel like we're doing a disservice to our future that we can't come out and be like, I did something wrong and it's okay. I accept that for myself because I learned from it.
I think that's a really incredibly strong and brave thing to do, especially on a podcast. Not that this audience would be anything but accepting and supportive, but I do think so much has changed. Women are still fighting for that almost equality. Obviously, it's a completely different world now, but there are still traces of that, of those belief systems in porn, as you said, and in other relationship dynamics where we're still stuck like where we were many decades ago. But it's incredible for you to like have that awareness and accountability to say, yeah, it wasn't right how I behaved, but also you're a product of your environment and how you were raised and the time, like all of that feeds into where you're at. It wasn't just a choice that you made to be that way. So
yeah. And the thing is, I haven't been in therapy in like 3 weeks. So I might get more emotional.
Here we are.
Yeah. So here we are.
I am the therapist.
Get this in front of me. Perfect. If you're the therapist, is it like the blind leading the blind?
Yeah. Oh, mate.
I'm just kidding.
I'll have you know, I do fortnightly sessions.
All right.
Haven't listened to my first episode.
Who's Christine?
My therapist.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Did you have her on the podcast?
She was the first episode.
Oh, that's
my
right.
Sex therapist.
I did know that. Sorry.
Yeah. Bear it all. Talk about bear it all. We may as well have been naked. I feel like that might be a new segment. Naked podcasting.
I like that. I like that. But going back to trying to be more respectful for women, I'm gonna defer from that for now.
I was just gonna say, did you ever like apologize or have you had any opportunity to speak to ex-partners about your behavior or?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what does that sound like?
The girl, the woman now, she has a family and I'm not going to call her by name. Her and I took each other's virginity at a very young age.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was kind of a cool romantic story for a while. But because we dated when we were in like junior high school. And that's when we took each other's virginity.
Cute.
Then we connected again when we were seniors in high school. Mm. And we were planning on, she was actually like dating her when I was a senior in high school. I was on house arrest. So that also helped. But she kind of like kept me on a track. Then, of course, I cheated on her and she found out. So then we separated again.
Mm-hmm.
And then years later, after my son had passed, which you knew, you kind of know about, I think, right?
Kind of. I was going to ask if we can talk about it today.
We're going to get there.
Okay.
After my son had passed, her and I started dating again. And then this is when I really realized that like my relationships with women were toxic. But it still took 10 years after that to even make any progress. So 2006, my son passed away. And her and I started dating maybe 2 years after that.
Mm.
And I was in such a fucking horrible place that I was a prick. And I was borderline physically abusive. And when I say that, I'm not trying to cop out, but like, that was very scary. We did a lot of drugs together.
Was that a new thing for you, or that had been an ongoing?
Drugs?
Yeah, in your life.
Oh yeah, I had been doing drugs since I was 14.
Do you mind if I ask what drugs?
Oh shit, I've tried all of them. Anything that didn't have a needle involved, I would fucking try it.
What was the thing that you kept going back to?
I don't know. Like I did coke, but not like, I was just thankfully like one thing that like, I don't know if it's a fucking guardian angel or whatever you want to call it, but for whatever reason, that addiction never set in because I was so fucking scared. I'm somebody who's like, I indulge. So I would go on a binge for like a weekend and I would just stay up and do blow. Right. And then I would be so fucking miserable and depressed come Monday. And for like 3 days, I would be just so down on myself and I would feel like shit. So I'd be like, fuck that. I can't do it again.
But right.
Until it was out of my system. And then I was eager to do it again.
Mm.
But anyway, I think it was like a gift and a curse because I was indulging and like not, I wasn't a good person and I was fucking up. However, I would get sick enough mentally, physically, and emotionally to not, like I would take time away. But if I didn't have whatever that was, I probably would have just become like a lot of my friends, a lot of people I knew.
It's totally amazing because considering it, that had been like in your life for so long that it didn't go that way, or that, you know, you didn't fall into that in a period of grief or anger. Like, it's really incredible. And that's what makes me think that addiction is a personality or a, like an ingrained aspect of people's makeup, because I feel like you either are or you aren't. You can either have boundaries, and maybe that's like, I don't know if that's a naive perspective to have because I've never been addicted to drugs or around a lot of people who have had addiction, but it's in my family and I feel like I have a pretty good understanding of the path for most people.
Mm.
But I just feel that it seems everyone I've spoken to, like they just can't not be the way they are. As in become addicted to things. It's that's in every part of their life, whether it's they're addicted to working all the time or sex or exercise or compulsive behavior, like it's trained. So maybe you just don't have that streak in you and you were able to like have the boundaries.
Not with drugs. Yeah, it's funny you brought up sex. And we're jumping around a lot, which is...
Take the stage.
No. I'm just...
Would you say you had a sex addiction?
I have.
Currently still?
Yeah, I think so.
What is, do you think is the reason behind that?
That one, I don't know. I mean, the family, the Lent family, which is my birth name, my last name.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think it's Mark James, but my real last name is Lent.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say that, yeah, I have some uncles and even my father, if you listen to this, Dad, sorry, calling you out, but he probably wouldn't care. Definitely a high sex drive in our family. And I'm not saying that in a braggadocious way by any means, because I think that as I gotten older, sex almost became empty. It was like the equivalent of masturbating.
Mm-hmm.
Like you finish and then it's just like, oh, that's over. There's no like, so many times I don't even have a number, not even close to having a track of like, how many times I've had sex and then just wanted the person to leave.
Mm.
And I don't mean that in a sense of like, oh, I got this girl, I bagged this girl, you know, whatever like a guy says, but just in a sense, I think it was like, it was an emotional immaturity that I wasn't recognizing, you know? And I really don't like to be around people that much for very long, but I had this like urge.
Is it an urge for connection or love or safety? Like what do you think is actually driving that? Or it must be more than a physical thing.
It is. And that's another thing. That's another crazy part of it is like, for me, sex is like, it could be a one night thing, or it could be somebody that I'm dating for a long time. Mm-hmm. No matter what it has been, as far as like the connection with the woman, mm-hmm. It's always very passionate for me. And I don't mean the sex, I'd mean the connection with the woman. The physical touch, the emotional connection. But then the problem is if there's not a real connection there with the woman, mm-hmm. then it's like, then maybe it's a little bit of running away from it.
Bit of avoidant behavior.
Yeah.
Hi, everyone. A quick reminder that if you are loving this chat, I would be so grateful if you could take 2 minutes now to jump on whatever platform you're listening to this and leave a review or share the episode you're currently listening to on social media. I'd love to see where you're listening from, if you're going for a walk, if you're at the gym on the treadmill, if you're driving. Obviously, don't take a photo if you're driving. But it is so incredible to see that we now have listeners from over 35 countries tuning in. And the more that we grow, the bigger guests I can bring you. I am so, so grateful that you're here on this journey with me. And I'm excited about the life chats that we have coming up with some absolutely inspiring guests. Thank you so much. This is very interesting to me because when we first met, you described yourself to me as a hopeless romantic. And I'm interested as to where that comes into this, because I imagine if you feel like you need to cultivate sexual connections that might be a bit empty, like where does the love come into it?
See, and that's the thing. And that's kind of what I'm saying now that you go back to saying hopeless romantic. Like, I do still consider myself that. If I'm in a relationship with somebody and I'm really in it, mm-hmm. I do all those things. The, you know, flowers are at the house when you get home mm-hmm. from work. I leave notes. I do all those things that I think women, it's those little things that you think men would just do it and have yeah. common sense that your partner is going to be so happy for that little note with a heart on it or the flower mm. or whatever. But men don't really do that. And I think that's, again, that can be used to your advantage or not, because let's call it charm instead of hopeless romantic, right? I think if you naturally have a charm to you, then you don't even realize what you're doing is such a big impact on your mm-hmm. partner, because you'll do that for many people. Another thing I'm going to say that's, I'm probably going to, if people listen to this, I'll get some fun texts and DMs. I've lived in New York City for 20 years and I've taken so many women home mm-hmm. to meet my family. Two reasons.
Interesting.
One is because a lot of people from New York City are transplants, right? Mm. So they don't have, a lot of women I've dated didn't have families. So mm-hmm. there's Christmas, there's no family to go to. And I never looked at it as like, from a woman's perspective of like, oh my God, he's taking That's me home to meet deal. His family. To me, it was more like, I care about this person. So I want them to be with some kind of family and be happy and mm-hmm. and feel loved and feel welcomed, you know? And then the other side of that, which again, sorry, family, if you listen to this, but I love to bring somebody home so I can have like a buffer from my family.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Like moral support.
Yeah, moral support, or more like, my family's annoying the shit out of me right now. Let's go for a ride up into the woods. Yeah.
Yeah.
Moral, emotional, whatever you want to call it. Because my family's a turbulent fucking ride most of the time, even to this day. But, you know, to just kind of come back around full circle to the original
love
conversation about love and relationships. I did 10 years of therapy grieving the loss of my son. And now my therapy is, I'll still talk about my son and you can already hear it in my voice, it cracks, but that's never going to change. So I've accepted that and I'm a little better about talking about it without mm-hmm. full out bawling. Right now, my therapy, I go to therapy weekly, every Monday, and it's about my relationship with women. So it's Avery's mom, toxic relationships that I've been in that have been on both sides. Because, you know, I'm sure you'd attest this, like you attract what you are, right?
So 100%.
I've had plenty of women that have not been angels either, mm-hmm. you know, that have lied, cheated, and done bad things.
Mm.
Typically younger women in their 20s. I'm just kidding.
Can't relate.
I'm kidding. But no, of all ages. But I think that as I've gotten older, it's probably been a blessing that I've had some of those women or I felt some of those things. So I understand what I'm doing to other people, and it helps me understand forgiveness. But anyway, the point of that is, one is I hope that we can get to a point where 40-year-old men can talk about being a scumbag and being somebody who made mistakes and have hurt their partners in whatever form you want to discuss or, you know, touch on, all of them, but not be, can have a safe place to talk about it. And so we can help, again, help younger men. And now I don't know if it's so much about younger men not abusing women in whatever form that we're talking about, but I do feel that younger men are having a really hard time connecting with women.
Totally.
Oddly enough, I think it's because of dating apps.
It's dating apps. It's porn. Culture.
Like
online.
When I was a kid, you had to watch porn on Channel One, which was
the
Scrambled Channel. Magazines. That's too boring for crazy. The Scrambled Channel, if you got lucky, you could hear it. So yeah. If you use your imagination, that's good. But every once in a while, you got lucky and the scramble would come in and you'd see some action. But now it's crazy when you stop and you're like, holy shit, you can literally just go on your phone and watch porn.
We could literally do a whole episode on dating, which maybe we should, but I want to I want to just ask a couple of questions before we potentially talk about your son.
Okay.
But just when you were talking about dating and women, have you ever apologized to your ex-partners?
I'm sorry. Yes. We were talking about that. So the girl whose virginity, we took each other's virginity, after all the shit that happened with my son, and she had to, I don't want to say suffer, but she had to deal with that and navigate that. And we're in our 20s still. We're kids,
So young.
So to have such a serious thing that impacts life. So I'm not the one that says this. I don't say to people, oh, I lost my son. So I've been through the hardest thing that you could imagine. Because I have friends that are in the military and I've heard some fucking crazy things that happen overseas to people. And when you hear that, you're like, damn, I don't know what the hardest thing for a parent to go through is. So anyways, sorry to answer your question. This woman, after we had split up for years, she then at this point, I was finally starting to get my career on track and things were starting to look up. I was starting to shed light on some of my darkness, my negative behaviors and my relationships with myself and women and blah, blah, blah. And I invited her over one day to my apartment and we sat out on the balcony and spoke and I apologized. She accepted. And yeah, we haven't spoke since, but it was a really good feeling because this was a woman who I would consider pretty much as far as a partner, damn near perfect. And I don't ever, if she had ever lied to me, I never knew about it. And I don't think that she had. And she had to deal with so much and weather the storm with me. And she tried her hardest to hang in there. So I owed her an apology. And then since then, yes, I've had to have those hard conversations. And some of them I'm friends with now and some we don't talk anymore.
Do you think that was kind of the moment for you that you mentioned earlier in the conversation something there was a turning point for you or you just realized you had to work on your own shit? Was that the moment or it was perhaps losing your son? What was the moment that put things into perspective of I need to look inwards and figure out what's going on here?
I think after dealing with my son's loss for so long, I think that I started to dissect a little more than just the loss, than a little more than the death. I had to start thinking about, okay, well, what's this connection with this death that maybe is making me act a certain way? Or what are some shortcomings that I'm not able to identify, why these things are happening? And it leads down to relationships with women since I was a young child.
Have you been in love before?
Whew. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, yeah, but
there was a big time that you had.
This goes back to the hopeless romantic thing. I think I can just be in love.
With anyone?
I don't know, not anyone. Because there's plenty of relationships I've had that were amazing partners, but for whatever reason, I was not in love with them. I love them as people, but they could have just as easily been like sisters, you know, close friends. That's what I mean by that. So that's a tough question. I don't know.
Maybe not.
Have you?
No, I haven't.
How old are you?
27. As of Saturday.
Oh, that's right.
That's my birthday. But
belated birthday.
Thank you. No, I haven't been in love. I've been with people that I thought it could go that way. Like, okay. I was like, that's where I'm going to end up if this continues. But I'm sure we'll talk about this off camera. Maybe we'll talk about it on camera. But I always date very emotionally unavailable people as a reflection of me being emotionally unavailable, which we've spoken about before. I have like a massive fear of, I guess, intimacy, commitment, or closeness of any kind to people, because it represents to me a loss of my independence and my dreams. Like, I've literally correlated a relationship with my life not being what I want it to be.
I remember you saying this.
Which is so extreme. And it's obviously a safety mechanism for me. But to answer your question, no, I haven't, because I haven't dated people that are like worthy of me falling in love with. I've dated people who are like, not the nicest humans.
How long has it been since you stopped drinking?
2.5 years.
If we would have met 7 years ago,
it would be a fucking disaster. It would have been one of the best disasters.
Maybe I'd be apologizing to you right now on this podcast.
Oh my Lord. We haven't got long before we've got to wrap up, but I do want to talk about Avery. This is totally a safe space and you don't have to share anything you don't want to.
I feel
to.
Like I'm about to take ayahuasca when you say that. Okay, go ahead.
I'll lead you in. No, but really, I want to give you the opportunity to share whatever you might want to, knowing that maybe your friends and family are listening or that you haven't spoken about this publicly, but also there is zero pressure just because it's me to like go into the details. We really don't have to if you don't.
It's you and a microphone in my face and a camera.
Yeah.
And these big lights.
I guess just the purpose of me asking is like that experience obviously has changed your life, and I would be interested to hear like how you feel about it now looking back.
If you can't get a camera shot on that.
I know, beautiful.
Sorry. The reason I looked to the dog is because if you want to like talk about like having a spirit animal or something that is like as powerful as having a son, it's him. It's fucking crazy the connection I have with this dog. I had a dog before that was supposed to be that, but I think because I was in such a dark place, the dog reflected my energy.
Totally.
So he was a fucking prick too. But shout out, Guinness, rest in peace.
No.
I told myself I wasn't going to say shout out on this, but I shouted out my dog.
We can cut it out.
All right. So Avery is from LA, funny enough, which obviously is where we're at. He's buried here in I always mix up the name of the cemetery. I want to sit. It doesn't matter.
You were living in LA at the time?
Past the Palisades. No, his mom's from LA.
Wow.
We met when she was in school in Pittsburgh.
This is not the woman who you were with after his death?
We weren't together.
Right.
We had speaking of one of the turbulent relationships, again, we're 20. I think we met when I was like 21. Avery was born in 2003 and he was born, I flew out here and her and I drove back to Pennsylvania where my mom lived. I was in school in New York at the time.
How old were you?
23. I was 23.
So young, hey.
Yeah. So we drove back to my mom's. She lived at my mom's because, you know, we didn't have a lot of money. And she could live with my mom while I was in school. I could be close so I could drive back and forth from New York to home. And we had better, Pennsylvania had like better benefits or something for pregnant women.
Mm-hmm.
So her and I decided we could not be together. We were not.
While she was pregnant?
Yeah, we talked about it and it just wasn't gonna happen. I was not relationship material. We didn't want a forced relationship and then, you know, have us be unhappy. I would have definitely made her unhappy. So she ends up, we're not together. She has the right to date whoever she wants. And so she started dating a guy that I grew up with. And it was odd. You know, it was a little uncomfortable because we stopped talking after high school, the guy and mm-hmm. I'm not going to say his name. I'm sorry. Him and I didn't speak after high school because, in my opinion, he was one of those that was going down the wrong path. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to stay away from that path that I was teetering on. Mm-hmm. So we lost touch. They started dating shortly after we had gotten back from LA. She was pregnant when they started dating. Mm-hmm. And he knew and he didn't care. Whatever. That's not a judgment comment by any means. But she moved back out to LA after Avery was born with the guy. He came. They ended up having another child who just graduated high school. So congratulations to him. He's a really, really great young man. So he was supposed to be watching my son on July, on a 4th of July party. It was a pool party. And I was just here. And I was going to transfer schools and come out here and live and be close to my son. She wasn't going to live on the East Coast. And I wasn't going to not be part of my son's life. So I came out here, looked at apartments, looked at to transfer schools. And a week later, he passed. I left, went back to New York. A week later, it happened. And the guy was supposed to be watching him. He wasn't. I don't know. He fell asleep. He was drinking. So Avery didn't. He fell in the pool and didn't make it. So we didn't talk for a really long time after that. And then in 2014, the guy ended up drowning himself. He didn't drown himself like suicidal. He had an issue with substance. And he went back home. Avery's mom didn't want to be with him because he wasn't suitable with his drug problem. At the end, looking back, he wasn't a bad guy. He just had demons. And so people are always like, oh, he got what he deserved, especially the people that I'm, you know, people that I, that are in my close group, my circle. That's kind of the mentality we have. But I think, again, when you go through this, you kind of soften up. So I can still be a hard ass on the surface, but inside, I think I feel for people and I try to forgive no matter what the circumstance. So he, as I said, I think it was 2014. Yeah, he didn't make it. He had a drug issue. He went back to Pennsylvania because, or New York, Pennsylvania, whatever, the Buffalo area. And he ended up drowning. I don't know if he was on drugs or he was just weak from the drug use. And he didn't make it. So I didn't speak to Avery's mom until that had happened. And then we started keeping in touch and getting, you know, getting closer as friends. We're friends to this day. She, last year, when we had the tattoo, I come out here for work now. Mm-hmm. We have a tattoo expo in Pasadena. And last year she came to visit while I was at work. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up staying an extra day and her and I went to the cemetery together for the first time ever since that had happened in 2006. So that was a pretty, like, it was a good feeling. And when I lived in LA for 8 months, her and I hung out a few times and it was amazing that all that time had gone by. And even when you talk to people who have been through similar situations, it still isn't a connection. So when her and I got together and started to become friends again, it was like we understood each other.
You'll always have that.
Yeah.
You're like, you'll always be yeah. Avery's mom and dad.
Yeah. 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 And we understood it and we both, it's weird. We both like came to accept it. We handled it very differently. I handled it by using more drugs and alcohol and became an asshole, a bigger asshole than I already was. And she handled it by, I hope she would forgive me for saying this in public or on a platform like this, but I think everybody has an outlet. And I think her outlet was like social media. Like she was crying out for help through like Facebook and things like that. And that's why I got off of Facebook and didn't have social media for a very long time was because I hated when fucking people would send me things about God. And I'm not saying I believe or don't believe in God. I feel spiritual, but I didn't want to use religion to help me heal from my son's passing. I didn't feel that's not how I would handle something like that. And that's okay if people do. I'm not saying I'm not judging that. But anyway, the point is I got off of Facebook for that reason. Whereas I think she used it, you know, as a way to cope. Mm-hmm. And now looking back, I'm like, oh, maybe I would have rather used Facebook as a way to cope than drugs and alcohol. But anyway.
I just want to say, like, it can't be easy reliving that and also sharing with basically a stranger. So thank you. Mm. What helped you heal?
Time and just, you know, perseverance. Staying on track with values or finding values, new ones. One thing going, kind of tying all this together, a lot of people from my childhood, like I said, there was staff at the high school I went to who wanted to see me succeed, but there were a lot of people that expected I would fail. Mm-hmm. And Jeff and I were talking earlier. So the second tattoo I ever had was small enough to be covered by my watch. And I got rejected for a job parking cars because you could see the tattoo through there. So I think part of what I consider success now is the fact that I wanted to prove a lot of people wrong, and I wanted to not become a statistic. And I'm writing a book right now called The Wondrous Mess of Contradictions, which mm-hmm. comes from a Jack Kerouac novel, and I have it tattooed right here. And the reason, I feel like it's a calling, you know, my son passed for a reason, and I don't want to let that reason, I don't want to squander that.
What is the reason?
Like many people's calling, I think that we should leave the world better than when we found it or when we got here, right? So I don't know, you know, I don't have a number. I'm not saying it has to be millions, thousands, whatever, but I would love when this book is completed and when all is said and done, I can look back and say that I was able to help the next generation. It doesn't have to be generational. It could be somebody older than me. But I want to help people succeed and be able to persevere through their challenges, whether that be the loss of a son, whether it be prison, mm-hmm. whether it be really bad with relationships. I would like people to say, oh, if he did it with nothing, I can do that too.
If someone is listening and they're perhaps going through some really intense grief right now, they've lost someone or their world's been turned upside down, like what is the one kind of thing you needed to hear during that time? Or was there anything that could have changed how you felt?
Yeah, keep going. It could have, you know, there's no timeline. The pain will never go away, as you can see. Like this is the first time that I've talked about it like this with cameras in my face and on a microphone. So it was a new challenge for me.
But you did amazing.
Thank you.
You did.
You did amazing. Thank you.
No worries.
Thank you for guiding. Of course. But I would say that the pain will never go away, but you can conquer things through little achievements and they'll add up. And then eventually you'll have a purpose and your purpose will be passed on to the next person who needs it. So I think that would be, you know, that would be what I would say is just find a purpose for why something happened. And especially the darkest ones, the biggest challenges, the biggest failures, the biggest upsets, those things have happened because you're strong enough to deal with them. You're definitely like they were given to you to handle, but it's still up to you. It's not, it could be your calling, but you could still miss it, I guess, you know?
It's incredible advice.
So just hang in there.
Thank you. Before we wrap up, there's a couple of questions, but before we wrap up, I guess I'm interested to hear, is there anything you would change about your journey? Like, is there anything?
Thank you for asking that. Cause the fucking crazy part is no, this is going to maybe sound weird to people, but I say this all the time, like having this dog in my life for the last going on 3 years now, I wouldn't trade him to have my son back. I wouldn't trade anything because, I mean, when you say that kind of stuff, I think you're leading yourself down false hope and you're selling yourself short on what I just said. I was given something. That boy was put here for 3 years to change people's lives, not through his life, but through his death. And so it's like when somebody says, oh, I wish I could be 27 again.
You can't.
That was a joke.
I know.
But you know what I mean? It is when people, like, I fucking hate when people say that. Like,
yeah,
oh,
I wish.
I'm 42 next week and I can't fuck, like, I can't, I can wait because, again, I don't want to rush it, but I would never go and I would never go back to being 39 because, you know, I'm better because I've chosen to find a way to be. So I wouldn't change anything at all.
Beautiful.
I'd be a little taller.
No.
And maybe I would change the some of these tattoo choices. Right, Jeff?
We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
There's a closing tradition on this podcast. Okay. Where every guest is asked the same question. I'm not sure if you have heard it or not, but you can answer in as many or as little words as you like.
Okay.
And Mark, that question is, what is the meaning of life?
The meaning of life? I'm going to just say, again, I'm going to use the same word, perseverance. I think that we're meant to be here. We all have a reason to be here, as cliche as that sounds. There's a reason to be here. But that reason is definitely up to you. Like, you have a destiny, but it's not set in stone. You can miss your calling. You can miss your opportunities. You can miss your purpose. But not if you don't want to. It's what you make it.
Yeah.
You know, I hope that's not a cheap answer, but
no, it's perfect.
I think that it's just really about hanging in there and making it happen for yourself, you know? And enjoy the time you're here and don't fucking worry about how old you are and how, like, what you missed out on. Because that's something I tell younger people who are going through stuff when I talk to them. I talk to a lot of young artists and creative people, tattoo artists. And I try telling them, like, I'm 42. I hang out with a lot of dudes that are and females that are 10 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just given it's the nature of the beast in this industry. There isn't really an age. But anyway, I will end it on this. Like, 10 years of fucking up, 20 years of suffering, your whole life could be a shit show, but I guarantee you, if you take a year to get everything right, and it's not going to be perfect, you're not going to be rich right away or whatever it is that you're striving for. The next 5 years, I could have 42 years of just shittiness, which I didn't, but a lot of it was hard, right? If I am where I envision myself to be at 45, it will have all been worth it and is all worth it. So 40 years of craziness won't outweigh 3 years of happiness. And I know, and I can contest this through a lot of my friends who have been in prison for a lot of their lives. They got out and they did the right thing with their lives and they're driving amazing cars and they're super successful and they're doing it the right way and they're amazing parents. And when you look at them, you would never guess that they did 20 years in prison. Mm. I'm sure they feel that and remember it, but the 5 years of happiness that they're experiencing right now, you can't touch that. So
it's never too late.
Never. Anyone. It's never too late. It's never too late. And it'll always, 3 months of happiness will considerably change your life.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for showing up so honestly and bravely. It really, I don't think people understand the magnitude of what you did today unless they're here, sitting here, and they have these conversations or they've been through an experience like what you've been through. So I just want to acknowledge that. And obviously everyone who's listening to this will never, I mean, they might reach out to you. I encourage them to, but they might not have an opportunity to say thank you in person. So on behalf of everyone listening who takes value out of this, I want to say thank you. Mm. And I just think you're an incredible human. You have an amazing lens on life. Even though perhaps you had a challenging life, you wouldn't say you've had a hard life, but it does sound like you've had to deal with some challenges. You seem like a positive person who wants to make the most of life. And I just want to acknowledge that because I appreciate that so much.
Thank you. And thank you for what you do. You're an amazing person as well. You have an old soul.
Oh, I do. I actually do feel about 95. So I think I'm on my like fourth lifetime here. Maybe.
You might be. Yeah. You're a very unique and beautiful individual. So thank you for having me. It's really an honor to be here.
Amazing.
Thank you.
This is Life Chats. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Please let me know who you'd love to hear from next, or if you have a story to share, I'd love to get in touch with you. You can connect directly with me on Instagram at lifechatspodcast, one word. And every review and share really does help so much in the early days of building a podcast. So if you've enjoyed this conversation, please share it on social media, or you can snap a pic of where you might be listening and jump onto Apple Podcasts and give us a review. I really do appreciate the support more than you know. Have a beautiful morning, afternoon, or evening wherever you may be listening in the world. I'm Georgia May, and this is Life Chats.